drinking water, it just don't seem to be quenching me thirst. I think I need something a bit stronger. It'll be cool. My name's Darren, I'm an addict. Right, before we move any further, I want to say that I'm not an expert in recovery. I'm not speaking on behalf of Cocaine Anonymous, and I'm certainly not a fountain of knowledge or wisdom or anything like it. I think one of the most, if not the most, valuable piece of information I could ever give anybody who's new in this fellowship is this. The granddaddy of all recovery programs is in the book. I never knew that, and I think that's very important information. Now, there's a piece in the book, I do believe it's in We Agnostics, and it says, it says, in the preceding chapters, you've learned something of alcoholism. We hope we've made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. And then it says, if when you honestly wanna, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking and using you have little control over the amount you take, you're probably an alcoholic. And then it says, if that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only your spiritual experience will conquer. Right? Now, I drunk and used for 20 plus years and tried a couple of different interventions along the way and none of them worked. Right? For me, the intervention had to be divine. Yeah, and that divine reality happened to be God. Right, and I give thanks to that power for my sobriety. Because to me, sobriety equals life. Right, without it, everything else is lost. Without it, everything ceases to matter one more time. Because that's always been my experience. Right, and the hand of Almighty God expelled the life of my mind at this time. It's going to be different. Right, I was exposed to the truth on my arrival here. And the truth is what sets us free, is it not? And I love Cocaine Anonymous. To me, it is the way, the truth, and the life. Now, there's a piece in the book. It's in the doctor's opinion, right? And it says, there are types normal in every respect, except in the effect the alcohol and the drugs has upon them. They are often able, intelligent, friendly people. Right? Well, I'm not one of them. Now, I don't know too much, but what I do know is this, right? I was emotionally retarded before I ever put a substance into my body. And I'll explain what I mean by that. I grew up in a home environment that wasn't very nice, and that's why I used. Or so I was led to believe for many years. But it was kind of like this. I'm naturally restless, irritable, and discontent. Naturally. Not I think I might be. I am that. As far back as I can remember, I was very, very overwhelmed with a real uncomfortable feeling of self-consciousness. From day dot. And my perception of my mind was twisted. My dad, who's now dead, he was a drug addict and alcoholic. He ruled the roost, right? And what he said went, and you never ever questioned that. When he clicked his fingers and said jump, you didn't hang around and ask how high. You just started jumping and you did not dare stop until he said so, right? And that's the way it was. Alongside that, I just couldn't hear properly. Like, you could say something to me very simple, like, they're a nice pair of trainers you got on Sunday, no. But my mind said that you meant the last ones was hanging off your feet, you needed a new pair. That's not what you said. So, as a result of what was going on indoors, I just felt destroyed, devastated with a soul-sickening fear that I just couldn't seem to shake on my own resources, and I carried that with me wherever I went. And I never kind of walked out into the flats and thought, you're riddled with self-consciousness, you're naturally restless, irritable and discontent. You're afflicted with more than one form of fear. You better go and use. I was never awake to any of that. This is just looking back in hindsight. So as you can imagine, being in that state, when alcohol and drugs went into my body, I felt better. The alcohol and drugs give me power, right, and allowed me to feel comfortable being me. And as a result of that, I felt all right around you. And I drunk and used for 22 years, just storming through life, just doing what I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, Never ever stopping to spare a thought for you. Only ever stopping to spare a thought for you if there was something in it for me. It's called selfishness. Book says that's the root of the trouble. And you might hear me say book says and quote stuff out of book, and I'm certainly not going to apologise for that because the programme of action is in the book. So the first substances I ever used was glue and lighter fuel and stuff like that. And even with that, I'm one of these, it's like, let's break down the craving and find out what you crave. I just need anything. You give me glue, I need more. Light fuel, I need more. Alcohol, heroin, cocaine, prescription drugs, anything. I need more. The only thing I don't need more of is amphetamine. I absolutely hate it. Right, and it's the only drug that I ever sold and earned money out of, because it's the only thing I absolutely hated. So, from a young kid, I used lighter fuel, and it ended up for the last 10/12 years, heavy-hitting narcotics mixed together, used intravenously, crack and heroin. Like the other lady touched on, I was a speedball junkie. And I'll just do anything I can to get another one, and do anything I've got to do to make that possible. And in the middle of that, for about 10 years, it was okay. It was nice. And sometimes it was looking fantastic. And I've done the cocaine thing and stuff like that. And it was a little bit like this. Like, you know, looking back on it, I kind of would walk up to the Abbey Tavern or the Nag's Head or something like that, like on a Friday night, with nice clothes on me back, nice trainers on me feet, plenty of cocaine in my pocket, a big wad of money, none of it was mine. And I kind of walk into the pub, like acting like something I'm not, because as well as this disease, I suffer from a thing called IGS, and that stands for imaginary gangster syndrome. I think I'm something I'm not, mate. Right? So I'll be at the bar going, yeah, all right, darling, yeah, get her a gin and tonic, will you? Yeah. What's happening, son? Get him a vodka. Right? Yeah, and all that. Right, with money that weren't mine. With cocaine, like giving lines of it out to females, and then wake up in the morning and think, oh no, I owe her about £500, how am I going to pay it back? You know what I mean? I was one of them. Right? And even with the cocaine thing, it was kind of like, I'd sniff it absolutely savagely, right? And I didn't even like it. I didn't even like it. I only came to like cocaine later on when I found out you could mix it with heroin and use it intravenously. I fucking loved it then. But I kind of be in the pub just trying to hold me jaw together so it ain't swinging like a camel in front of you. Because I just don't want to look like a mug. Because I just suffer with devastating levels of pride. So I'll just sniff cocaine savagely, just get absolutely drunk as a lord, right? Then go to Ahmed's on the corner to get a kebab and probably get beat up. And then wake up in Holmes Road police station and say, why am I here? You know, and that's when it was good. Yeah? And then it weren't so good. And then it was fucking pitiful. You know, and with a drug thing and all that, I can kind of survive in that world and I can do what I need to do to get what I need to get. But what I can't do is sobriety. If you take the alcohol and the drugs off of me, right, you might as well strip me bare, right, and I'll get a real uncomfortable feeling. It's called fear that you can see that. Right, and I'll do absolutely anything I can to cover that up. So this is what used to happen. My life would be falling apart externally. Stuff like I might have a warrant out for my arrest, or I'm a little bit in debt, or her indoors has got the yump and said, don't come back. You know what I mean? Stuff like that. And it'd be getting a bit messy. And I'm one of these as well. Like I kind of just, as messy as it gets, I just do not stop. You've got to stop me. I need to be separated from the substance in order for me to stop. So this is what used to happen. I'd sometimes, once or twice, I got arrested. It's not a requirement, by the way, you know. But I'll get arrested, and then I'd say, help me, please, help me. And they'd help. And I'd end up in a... nut houses for vulnerable adults with drug and alcohol problems. They call them treatment centres. So this is what happens to me. I go in there. I sit in a group therapy environment and I'm just really, really uncomfortable. So it's stuff like, we're going to do a feelings check this morning. Now, where I lived, you never discussed how you felt. Yeah, you just got on with life, done what you was doing. If you fell over, you got up, dusted yourself down, and then just moved up the street. And that's the way it was. And then I go into these environments, and they want me to discuss how I think I feel. And I just do not know. Like, and the only introduction I ever had to recovery was to talk about how you think you feel. And I thought that's how you recovered. Right? And I thought, right, this is what you do. You shovel it all out, yeah? All this stuff inside, right? You put it all on the table, they pick through it all, pick out an issue and go, that's it, that's why you done it, and then you don't do it no more. And it was a fucking lie, right? So it'd go round the group, how'd you feel? I don't know. He's coming round, he's getting to near me, I just feel anxious. I feel a little bit fucking tense here. I'm destroyed with fear because I know he's coming. It's just a simple question, how do you feel? I feel like the fucking world's ending. So I'm not in touch with how I feel, so I'll say something like, I'm optimistic and grateful. It was a lie. I didn't know if I was gas or electric. That's the truth. So, if I went back in there now, I'd say, listen, how do I feel? I struggle in every personal relationship I'm in. I suffer with deep-seated feelings of uselessness. I'm afflicted with basement-level self-esteem. I'm destroyed with alcoholic fear, sober, and I don't know why. Can you help me, please? They'd probably look at me and go, get the fucking psychiatrist for this one, please. I don't know if they knew. I don't know. It's another story. So I'll give them this. They're good places to get physically separated from the narcotics and the alcohol. You get a good detox under your belt. You start eating well, start sleeping well. And they say, go to meetings. So I go to meetings. And I went to a lot of meetings on more than one occasion. And I never, ever managed to stay here. Because this is what used to happen to me. I walk into the meeting. I've never heard of Cocaine Anonymous. I'm going back sometime. It was like Cockney Anonymous. Right? Yeah, in Camden Town. Right? So I walk in there, been on the sunbed. bit of gel in me, yeah. No clobber on. Sitting in a meeting, really worried about how I look. And it'd kind of be like, be a little bit unhealthy, let's say that. And it was kind of like this. Someone would talk, and it'd be very much based around what substances they used, the lengths they went to get it, how they now thought they felt. You know, the issues they used on, do you know what I mean? And stuff like that. And I'll be just looking at them and my mind screaming with alcoholic madness. And I'm just lost. And I just think, what the fuck is going on here? I don't feel too good. Because this is what happens to me. At first, I'm kind of happy to be clean. I'll get some relief. But what I've since come to find out, since doing what some of us do here, it isn't about relief. It's about release. I never knew that. It's about being set free. So I'll be in there clean, but just cocooned and incarcerated in the bondage of myself. And with each passing day, the depression gets thicker. Yeah? The resentment is absolutely tearing me up from the inside out. I can't shake it on my own resources. I feel really, really hard done by. I think the world owes me a fucking living. Right? And it's your fault how I feel. Right? Or I'll go to the other extreme. If you had stuff going on, I'd think it was my fault how you felt. Absolutely nuts. A lot of the girls in there are just crying. Right? Everyone's neck deep in issues, including myself, but I'll just never tell you that. And I would be doing my 90 and 90. And I'll just get worse and worse and worse with each passing day. And the voices in my mind, you know, the voices, we've all got them, haven't we? Get louder and louder and louder. And I just can't shut them off. So I need heroin. Yeah, and alcohol and cocaine, yet in Valium to do that. So my mind says to me, go down to Camden Town, see if Biggie G's outside the station, get yourself just a little bit of crack and a couple of bags of gear. By the way, pop in and get yourself a couple of Supers, go on the way, just to get in the mood. So I walked down to Camden Town. Now, this, you see, get in touch with this, right? The last time I'd done it, I was 11 months dry. I was going to say sober, dry. So I didn't actually have a drug problem, did I? I wasn't addicted to drugs. I ain't had a drug or a drink for 11 months. So, on the way down there, I've got about 20 plus years experience, right, to tell me, actually, son, this ain't a good idea, right? And the likelihood is this is going to happen. You're going to spend every penny you've accumulated in this 11 months. Then you're going to sell everything materially you've accumulated in this 11 months. Then you're going to borrow what you can off whoever's mad enough to give you it, because I never give it back. Right? Then you're going to go out thieving, and there's a very good chance that you might get arrested and put in Pentonville prison. But I just do it anyway. Because the needed power for me to not do that just ain't there. So I go to Biggie G. I get what I get. I've got it in my hand. All of a sudden, I feel better. I ain't even took it yet. So, I got it. I get on the bus, because I've never had a driving license. So, I'm on the bus, and the voices in the mind, yeah? There's a little bit of sanity saying to me, you could throw it out the window. You ain't took it yet. Yeah, and then the other ones are saying, just go and have it. It's going to make you feel better. Right? So I decided I'll go and have it. Now, the thing is, I weren't involved in that decision. I just thought I was. Right? Because I've been taught that the real drug addicts and the real alcoholics have no choice. I just do it anyway. Not when I'm using, I'm just powerless. We know that, don't we? I'm talking about stone cold sober. Well, dry. 11 months away from a drink or a drug, knowing the likelihood is this is going to get messy and you're going to be behind bars. Powerlessness, inaction. So I put it in me, and it done this. The book calls it ease and comfort. That's what the book calls it, right? Now, you see, I absolutely love the effect produced by alcohol and drugs. That's why I use them. I was just led to believe it was where I came from, and it was my dad's fault. It was all a lie. So the book calls it ease and comfort. Yeah, it shuts down the voices in my mind. Yeah, and allows me to be comfortable being me. And if I'm comfortable with me, you're okay. If I ain't comfortable with me, you're in trouble. You're getting it. So I'll do that. And then I can't stop. Because when I put one in me, I break out in a craving beyond my mind's control. And I can't make up my mind to just not have another one. You know, I ain't one of the ones that book talks about giving a sufficient reason some of us can stop. Yeah? Like, I max out my credit card. My wife threatens to leave. I come here and I stay. Look, no one in their right mind would have married me, right? And the nearest that I ever had to having a credit card was yours. That's the truth for me. So I use, and then that's it, it's game over. Right, and I run around the streets for about another 3 years doing absolutely anything I had to do to get out of my nut every single day until I came here. Right? There was nothing of any substance in my life. Yeah, there was nothing that was healthy. Everything was insane and toxic. Yeah, my whole life was just poisonous. Yeah, from the inside out. And I was absolutely lost. Right, and it was absolutely soul-destroying. I ain't even going to go into the details. And in the end, for me, right, it was pitiful. Yeah, the days of Gucci loafers and lock knives in my pocket and bags of cocaine, yeah, and money and all that was long gone. Yeah, and I mean that. It was running about, right, doing anything I had to do to go and get 30 or 40 pound, right, to just get some Kansas Super Skull, a few bags of heroin and a couple of rocks if I was lucky, right, to just get through the day, right? And my life just consisted of that. There was nothing else in it, right? My family have always been there, but there was nothing they could do because no human power can relieve us of the addiction. So in the end, I didn't even have anywhere to live, right? I was staying at a geezer's house. I used to knock at his gaff at night. He was called 20p Joe. He was like a professional beggar, this geezer, right? And saying his name, I just thought of it. Like we was outside an event recently in Camden. Myself, Jimmy was there, my brother Glenn, and he come walking past this kid. He's still at it, and I mean his legs, right, was double the size of what they're meant to be. Yeah, he had a hole, yeah, bigger than my eye in his leg with all poison coming out of it. Right, he looked like he hadn't eaten for a long time. And he just looked like a dead man walking. And he asked us for a bit of change. Man, I'll give him it. I said, I'll go and get yourself a bit of gear. But I used to knock at his gaff at night, Joe. Because I just didn't have anywhere to live myself, but I'd just never let anyone know that because of my pride. And I'd knock, and I'd have a couple of rocks in my hand and a couple of muggy little, like, £10 bags of gear, if that. And so I'd knock, and he'd let me in, right, even if he had his own, he'd let me in anyway, because I had what he wanted, and he's selfish, the same as me. So we go in there, talk absolute rubbish to each other all night. Yeah, just lie to each other. Right? Yeah, I'm a petty shoplifter, and I'll be sitting there talking about, you know, burglaries I'd done years ago. Yeah, do you remember that? Yeah, that kind of talk. Yeah, it was just an illusion in my mind. I was just lost. And so we'd have a bit of gear and have a bit of crack and have a couple of cans of soup with tenants, and I'd ponce a couple of the Zoppy clone off him. They're called sleeping tablets. Right? And then if I slept, I'd just wake up in the morning. This is the truth. Absolutely destroyed, with your capital D, with anxiety, depression and fear. Right, and my mind and my body aching, screaming from the pain of my own reality. And I just need a bit of gear, and I need something to drink, and I need it now. Right? Now, I thought I was using to escape my reality, but I wasn't. Right? Because I since found out I was using to try and overcome a craving that was beyond my mind's control. And I never was awake to that fact. So I left his ass one morning and went up to Hampstead High Street. It's like a posh part of North London. Run into a Gap and just done a kamikaze. Quick! Did you get free shirts? They just look at me like, fucking, just let him go. Right, like I've just done an armed robbery. And what had happened was, before I went to Gap, I went into a bookshop, right, and stole a couple of Guinness Book of Records. Yeah, Trisha in the pub will have that, 2-1, 2-1, 2-1. Everything was just drug tokens. It weren't even money. Right? 2-1, 2-1, 3 cans of Super Scott. That's it. There's nothing else in the game. And what had happened was, the woman had seen me take them in the first shop. And I don't know. I mean, I would imagine, like, I didn't look too healthy. A little bit frightening. So she just didn't approach me. But what she did do was call the police. Fucking bitch. No. So she called the police. And then by the time I'd done a kamikaze in Gap and come back down, they was coming out of the shop. And they went, come here, you're nicked. Oh, no. And then I spend all day in the police station with my mind saying to me, if you just fucking would have went across Hampstead Heath, you would have been sweetener. Because I'd just scurry across the park like a little rat. Like, yeah, to just get off the street. But I didn't, because I was just cocooned in, like, 2-1, yeah, and I got that, and da-da-da, and then I just got grabbed. And then I end up in the police station, and again, this is what happened. If you put me in the police station, get me the doctor now. There's nothing else in the game. Just get the doctor here quickly, because I just need some DFs and as many Valium as I can get. Thank you very much. My whole life just consists of getting the doctor out here. And so the doctor had come, an Irish doctor in Kentish Town Police Station. Hello, Mr. Hilliard, is it you again? Give me the fucking tablets, you know what I mean, and all that. The policemen look through the hatch. Don't know if any of you have ever been in a cell, but there's a little thing, and they open it up and look in. And they used to say things like, all right, son. Yeah. Do you want help now? My response would normally be, back off. Close the door. Yeah. Shut the flat, you know what I mean, and all that. But this time, my mouth opened up and I went, yes, I want help. And that weren't my doing, because I just do not ask for help. Because I think I'm the man with the blueprint and the fucking master plan. Yeah, I've got the key to this thing. I'll crack it. I'll know what I'm doing. Right, and it nearly killed me, because it was a lie. So I went from there and got put in prison. And this is what happened. I walked into that prison cell, and I've been in a couple before, can you relevant how many? And I was 32 years old at the time. And this is what happened. I kind of could see clearly my life for what it had become. Right, now this illness, book calls it an illness on page 18. A bit of knowledge for you all there. Hadn't stripped me of houses, money, cars, businesses, or anything like that, because it had never allowed me personally to gain that. Right? But it robbed me of all that was good in my life. Yeah, of all that could have been good, it was gone. Yeah, and I knew it. And that's when my hand was up in the air. Yeah, it's called surrender. Now, I'm not a man, as you've probably already heard, the ones that got the power to listen, that surrenders easily. I had to be beaten into a state of reasonableness, beaten into a state of surrender before I was receptive to listening to any of you. So I went from that prison cell to another nut house for vulnerable adults, knowing that I needed a prescription for a miracle. And I found that in the form of Cocaine Anonymous. Right, and thank God for the foot soldiers and the gunslingers in here, the ones with the books doing the work. Because where would I be had it not been for them? So I went to this nut house. Now, you've just heard what I said. But I'm in there with a mind that's now saying, actually, you're all right. With a new pair of Reebok Classic on. Bit like these ones. Not that much has changed. Right? With a mind that's saying, actually, you're sweet. It weren't that bad, actually, son. Right? Sitting in a group therapy environment next to this woman who I thought I loved. And, fucking hell. God, blimey. Anyway, I'm sitting next to her, thinking about our plans for the future. Do you know what I mean? No. And, Cocaine Anonymous come in, I think it was every second, two Thursdays a month. And, so he used to come in the H&I man, he'd have a bag with books in it. So she's got a drink problem, this female. So he said to her, "Here, my love, do you want a book?" And she already had the book. But even though she had one, she took it anyway, because she's like us and one's never enough. So now she's got two books. So she looked at me and said, "Do you want one of my books?" I looked at her with real love in my eyes. Right? You know, but probably scared her looking back on it. Right? I said, "Yeah." So anyway, now I've got the book. So, and I read the doctor's opinion in this book, right? And it explained some stuff to me that could never otherwise be accounted for. It explained to me stuff like, right, you've got to go to Highbury Magistrates Court this morning. If you don't go, there's going to be a warrant out for your arrest and you're going to get put in prison. So I know that, don't I? But my mind says, well, just go and score first and then go thereafter. And then I don't get there. The important appointment just couldn't be met. Because when I put one in me, that's it, all bets are off. So I've got one man here, a lunatic. It's called a sponsor. Because if you know, they're mad as well. Anyway, we done the work out of the book, and we done it quick, right? Because the steps, if any of you's got a book and you look at it, are designed to be worked fast and furiously. This is not a thinking process. It was never about, right, son, go away, analyse that, break that piece of work down, come back to me, and I'll tell you what that meant. Sorry? It was never about the knowledge. I took the action. I had the experience with the power, and then I went and worked with someone else. And you don't have to be years clean either to work with someone else. It's a lie. I was 5 months clean, as mad as a mad March hare, running about with smoke coming out of my arse and a big book. Yeah, we got a prescription for the way out, mate. Do you want a bit of this? Yeah, with some conviction and some passion and some fucking energy. Yeah, for that. Yeah, we got the keys to the kingdom, mate. Yeah, we got the way out, which we can absolutely agree on. Have we not? Yeah, and a big part of my spare time is spent doing that. Because me, personally, I can't speak for any of you. I am engaged on a life or death errand. Me. Yeah, I ain't one of the little... You know, I didn't just go on too many, like, benders and end up here because her indoors had the yump. Yeah, I'm one of the ones whose life depends upon God. Yeah, that's the truth, mate. Right, and my experience is this. The further I move away from the substance, the worse I feel. That's what you got to look forward to if you knew. I'll explain what I mean by that. I don't want to frighten you. Look, they're all leaving the room. I'll give you an example of my mind at nearly 5 years clean. I wake up in the morning. The alarm's going off. Put it on snooze. Get up. Don't put it on snooze. Get up. So I get up. Walk around the flat. Shall I have a cup of tea? Have another cigarette. Don't do that. Have a cup of tea. So I have a cup of tea, have another cigarette. Then I start thinking about my partner. What does she mean by that? Does she fucking mean what I think she meant? It was nothing. It was a flippant comment you made over a week ago. It's called resentment. Yeah, I thought God removed that, did he? Fuck. Ring up work sick. Sure. And then a little bit of sanity comes after 3 cups of tea and 4 roll-ups. You better pray, son. Because your life depends on it, by the looks of things. So then I bow down to this power. And I say, please come into my life and help me. Because without you, I'm nothing. I'm lost. And he comes. And then I feel better. And then I stand up and say, thank you, God Almighty, for my life. Right, and walk out my door with the energy and power, yeah, to get done what I need to get done. Because as a result of doing what we do here, I've now got a life worth turning up for. I work in the drug and alcohol game. Nothing to do with what we do here. It's just a job. Right? And I'm not one of the ones that... Well, you know, I'm a counsellor now. I help a lot of others in work. Excuse me? You get £400 a week for that. I'll never get it mixed up with what we do here. It's just a job. It pays my bills. And it's something I'm passionate about and something I'm good at. And I give you, the reason why I say that is this. A good friend of mine recently got put in a wooden box. He's now dead. Right? Because he made that mistake. Yeah? And he'd done some work here with us. Yeah? And God's good. And God gave him a life. And he forgot how and where he got that. And he was helping others in work. It can't treat alcoholism or drug addiction. It's just a job. Same as a bricklayer. Yeah, same as a man who throws rubbish bags in the back of the truck. Same as the architect. You know, whatever you may be. And he's now dead as a result of that. So I never get that twisted with what we do here. Never. Right? Because it's the selfishness, yeah, that kills us. It's the selfishness that's the root of the trouble. Book's quite clear. So I get a few years clean. Here's the selfishness in action. My mind says, don't go to the meeting. Actually, yeah, you went to one last week. Just get a pizza, go home and watch EastEnders. My phone rings. It's someone new. I look at it. Oh, I'm definitely not taking that call. Fuck him. Yeah? I'll switch it on silent. Comes to about 11 o'clock at night. Should do a little bit of prayer. Ah, you're all right, you're clean. Just jump in your Uncle Ned. Sweet. Have a good kip. Do it in the morning. Get up in the morning. Actually, you're a little bit late for work. Do it on the bus. Couple little half-hours in my head on the bus. Get into work. Help others in work all day. Then go home and do the same thing. And before I know it, I'm so suffering, I just can't claw my way back on my own power. And then I use. Because this disease, for me, gets worse, as I've already described. Yeah? And meetings can't fix it. Working in a needle exchange can't fix it. Yeah, none of that. Only the steps and God can, for me. And as a result of living this way of life, my whole life just gone bang and opened up like a flower. That's the truth. And as well as having fun in recovery, I take this thing seriously, mate. Because it kills men and women week in, week out. Week in, week out. And I don't want to be one of the ones just passing through. For a drug addict like me, there's nowhere else left to go. This was the last house on the block. Right, and there's been times, and this is the truth, when I've had to fucking dig my heels in deep, yet to stay here. Right, and if that happens again, then so be it. I'll do it again. I've had problems in recovery. I've had health problems. I've lost jobs. All that stuff. I was riddled with hepatitis when I got here. It affected me. It was attacking my liver. I was talking to Dave from Brighton about it earlier. I was having to go home and sleep 2-3 times a day. I was destroyed of it. I had to go on a load of medication for that. Not mind-altering, but it might as well have been. I was crying at watching Coronation Street. Yeah, my emotional nature is already twisted. Yeah, it weren't nice. Yeah, I've got a daughter, a little daughter. My partner's about 9 months pregnant. Bang, I lose my job. I go into extreme fear. Oh no, what are you going to do? Well, I do what you lot have taught me to do. I take action to get another one. Yeah, and that's what I'll do here. I take action. Yeah, and God takes care of the results. I've been through all that and got through it. Because in the midst of it all, God's all powerful and ever present. Yet even when I'm not in touch with that fact, because I know that, don't I, intellectually in my mind? I mean, when I don't feel that, he just is. He just is. Lovely piece in the book. It says either God is everything or God's nothing. He either is or he isn't. Yeah, what was my choice to be? Well, he better be, else I'm mucked. Yeah, so experience tells me he is, because I'm still here. Right, and I've seen legions, yeah, of men and women come in the short space of time that I've been here, where are they now? Where are they now? You see, we see the same old faces at the event. Where are they now? Many, many, many men and women come. But in my experience, as far as I can see, only the minority stay. So this is never about keep coming back. You're here now. How are you going to stay? Yet the arrogance of people to think, oh, well, I'll just go back to the meetings. Yeah, well, I'll just go back and take the steps. Well, how do you know you're going to get back? Yeah, and this is the lie that kills men and women. Yeah, because this is what happens. Look, man comes in. Oh, I'm in a mess. We help him. Come here, son. Let's go. We got the way out. You want that? Yeah, I want it. Can you conform to this? Yeah, look, you think you can do that? Yeah, you think that's a tall order? Yeah, bye-bye. Right, so he says, yeah, I can conform to that. Lovely, I'll do that. We get him. We do some work with him. Yeah, God's good. God turns up. He gets a job, a car, a new missus. 6 months later, he's not here. What happened to him then? Selfishness. That's what happened to him. Yeah, then he goes back out. He uses. But the using's finished. Because he's got a head full of the doctor's opinion. And there is a solution. And Bill's story and interaction. That don't mix with crack and heroin. What? So he comes back to the meeting by God's grace. Oh, can you help me? Okay, now he's in me again. All right, come on. You ready this time? Yeah, right, let's go. Yeah, we help him. 6 months later, he's gone again. Okay, now, what happened to him? Selfishness, that's what happened to him. Right, then he goes back and uses. Same thing happens. Right, then he comes back. You see, and what's killing him is that. Oh, well, I'll just get back. I got back the last two times. Well, how do you know you're going to get back? You might not. I'm not willing to test it. I'm not willing to play that game. Because like I've already touched on, I am on a life or death errand. I'm here to stay. I'm here to stay. Right, and the key to sobriety, in my experience, is working with others. And I'll tell you why. When I'm with him, I am out of me. If I'm away from him for too long, I'm into me. I don't work. Right? And this selfishness, this is the mind. I've got to meet your geezer at Ealing Station. Don't meet him, don't meet him, don't meet him. Ring him up and tell him he can't come. Ring him up and tell him he can't come. Right? Because the thinking, yeah, is still skewed. But the action's healthy. I turn up. I turn up. And then when he leaves my flat, I feel $1 million. I feel light. I start ringing everyone up. Hello, how you doing? Yeah? It's the key to sobriety. Yeah? You want self-esteem, do esteem things and you'll get that. Yeah? Or just read it off a bit of paper and just lie to yourself. I don't trudge around to all the fellowships. If that's your bag, lovely, whatever puts the wind in your sails, I don't do it. I love Cocaine Anonymous. Yeah, for me, this is where it's at. Right, this is the fellowship with the energy. Yeah, this is where the work's being done, in my experience. CA is small. We might think it's big. Oh, look how many meetings we've got now. There's no one in them. We might have grown in meetings, but that's about all. I stay here, yeah, and do the work with others in the hope that he stays and does the work with others and bang, thus we grow. That's why I stay here. How selfish of me. Well, I've got clean in CA, but you know, I don't really go there anymore. I come here. This is where it's at for me. And you know what? I'm not responsible, yeah, for what the guy does with this message, who we work with. But what I am responsible for is delivering this message to him out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, as it was delivered to me. Yet burn this message into his consciousness. Yet you too can recover if you trust God, clean house, and help others. Yet 6 months up the street, if he wants to sell drugs, sleep with every female he comes into contact with, that's his affair. I'll just move past that. But we are responsible for the message we are transmitting to these men and women. Because this is it not, the last house on the block? And you know what? My life today is healthy. My life is healthy. I now live a life of hope and limitless possibilities. Limitless. Whereas before, I was just lost. Yet in a sea of hopelessness that I just couldn't seem to find my way out of. And in my opinion, half the world could do with a crash course in what we do here. It would be a healthier place to live, would it not? I don't know what's round the corner, because I'm not God. But when I'm doing this work, it's normally all right. And if it's not, I've got you lot to carry me through it anyway. I'm going to wrap it up with this. There's a piece in the book, and it's written by a man called Dr. Bob. And God used him and others as vehicles to start the AA thing. Right? And without that, none of us would be here. And he says this: if you think you're an atheist, an agnostic, a skeptic, or have any other form of intellectual pride which keeps you from accepting what's in the book, I feel sorry for you. If you still think you are strong enough to beat the game alone, that is your affair. But if you really and truly want to quit drinking and using for one and all and sincerely feel you must have some help, we know. We have an answer for you. And it never fails if you go about it with one half the zeal you've been in the habit of showing. When you is getting another drink or drug, your heavenly Father will never let you down. And there is but one heavenly Father of light who presides over us all. That one is God. May you find him now. Thank you to Ozzy for asking me to come. Peace be with you all.